listening to the Fifth Down Podcast, football for fans, by fans.
Hello and welcome to preseason football and the kickoff of season four of the Fifth Down. I'm your host, Adam Glass, alongside, as always, my good buddy, Ryan Jones. We are so excited to kick off another season of the Fifth Down after taking this past off season off. If you're a returning listener, we welcome you back. We thank you. We hope you continue to enjoy the show. And if you are tuning in for the first time, we also thank you. We hope you do enjoy the show. We're just fans of the game, same as you, and we just wanted to bring you our perspective on all things football. No sponsors, no advertising, no Big Brother, no prepared script, just football talk from football fans. That's what you're going to get every week from us. We'll break down whatever we saw the previous week throughout all the games, any kind of stories, anything happening around the league. We'll try to be a little different than all the same stories that you get on Total Access and SportsCenter and NFL Live and all these other shows that are we love them, but they're carbon copies. They're cookie cutter shows. They're all prepared scripts from producers and whatnot. So we'll try to give you a different take on certain things and talk about some things that may not get as much mentioned in the media as others. We invite you to follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast. And the all-new website is thefifthdown.org. You can catch all our latest episodes, any blogs, any news, anything like that we throw out there throughout the week in between the games. And then, of course, follow our Twitter feed, like I said, throughout all the games on Sunday. We live tweet everything going on around the league. So we're 6 months removed from the Super Bowl. We've seen somewhat of an underwhelming free agency period. Not a whole lot of big names moved around this past year, or were available for that matter this past year. A huge draft, a draft that I think will be a turning point for many franchises 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road. A very, very deep draft going all the way into rounds 4, 5 that I think a lot of teams picked up some key players there. And now we're entering the second week of preseason. So let's start there. Anything in particular that has stood out to you so far?
It was more to me a bit more the same than that I expected. Some teams look great. Some teams showed improvement, but generally speaking, it's kind of you kind of expecting them not to do well. One of those is the Texans. The Texans front seven looked phenomenal. The Texans defensive backs couldn't figure out how to stop the ball, and their offense looked extremely anemic. Arizona, as usual, looked pretty promising. I know you're not a Carson Palmer fan, but I still have faith in Carson.
Can't stand him.
He's the best of the best of what was left. Okay, so deal with it, I guess.
Look, he was in Cincinnati all those years, and I understand when he was in Cincinnati, he bungled. Couldn't get anything done there. Went to Oakland, couldn't get anything. Oh, nobody can get anything done in Oakland, but even still, wasn't exactly a promising quarterback there, or didn't exactly have a thing coming there. And now, in Arizona. He had a good season. I shouldn't say he had a good season. He did okay for a little while last year. Defense is really what held that team together. But at the same time, we want to look at the season, and it's interesting that you began with the Texans Cardinals. That was a game that I really actually took notice to. Not one that I was looking forward to before the fact, but catching it on replay and looking at the stat lines of that game, I thought it was very interesting. 32-0 final score. Now, you don't put a lot of credit in final scores of a preseason game, but it's a team in the Texans that you really want to look at. It's a team that going into last season had aspirations of making it to Super Bowl, especially in AFC, that really was just Denver's to lose. And Texans seem to have as good a shot seem to have the best shot in the AFC of knocking off the Broncos going into last year. People get hurt, things fall apart, coaches get fired, and now you're in this weird situation with Houston where you're not rebuilding because you still have a great team. But clearly you're missing something, or you're missing a few pieces, because great teams don't have the number one overall pick. They don't have seasons like the Texans did this past season. You have a defense that's stacked with Jonathan Joseph and Brian Cushing and J.J. Watt. And number one overall pick, they go out there and they get Jadeveon Clowney. They don't address the quarterback situation. They don't address the potential wide receiver situation with Andre Williams either leaving via trade or his career winding down or retirement, things of that nature. A lot of big names in the top 10 that they could have potentially traded down for. I don't know if the trade just wasn't there or they didn't want to pull the trigger or they just liked the idea of having J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and Brian Cushing all on that defensive front. Usually far on the front seven. But either way, they go out there, they draft Jadeveon Clowney, they get the defensive guy, and they kind of piece things together at quarterback and see what they can do. They bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has shown flashes of I don't want to say greatness, but has shown promise in the past, but has never been consistent. He's had weeks where he's looked great. He's gotten his payday. He's gotten anointed as a starting quarterback a couple times in Buffalo and has messed it up each time, whether it's his fault or not, or a result of the talent that he has around him. But he just hasn't been able to be consistent, and that's the guy who Texans bring in to what, be their savior. I just don't get it. You hire Bill O'Brien as your new head coach, take him away from Penn State, a guy who has not been a head coach in the NFL before, simply a coordinator with New England, and we've seen in the past that coordinators coming out of New England and becoming head coaches in the league have not exactly had the best of success with their respective teams. So what happens? They go out there and they lose 32-0 to the Cardinals. If you're the Texans, I really just don't know where you go from there. You got to hope that the secondary steps it up, that this is just preseason, you're getting some bugs out, that Bill O'Brien just kind of coming into his own and getting a feel for the players, things of that nature. If you're the Cardinals, however, I think you have to be very, very happy with the direction your team is heading in. You had a great defense beginning last season, which was piggyback off the season before. Your quarterbacks went out there, and Carson Palmer, as much as even you said, I'm the antithesis of a Carson Palmer fan. I do not think he's a good quarterback. I do not think he deserves the amount of chances that he's had in this league, and I don't think he should still be in this league. But despite that, he's a starter for the Cardinals right now. He went 5-for-5 on his only drive. Logan Thomas, fourth-round rookie quarterback, comes in, plays the entire second half, goes 11-for-12 in the second half. Texans defense has basically given up close to 100% completion from opposing quarterbacks. Not going to win games that way. Likewise, if you're the Cardinals, you got to be very happy with the situation you have with Carson Palmer finishing up his career and Logan Thomas, who looks like an absolute beast. And this guy is 6'6", 210 pounds. This is a big boy who's coming in and looking great so far in training camp in his first preseason game. And this is a guy who's going to be the quarterback of your team for the next 10 years, hopefully. Things are looking very good in the desert.
Yeah, and on top of that, I don't believe that the rest of their division can keep up the high, I guess, for lack of a better word, the high standard that they're currently doing. Right, I think a team like the Seahawks, they can only go down from here, right? Not only were they a great team last year, but they won it all, right? You kind of saw the same thing, I think, at least in my opinion, with the Niners, where in the beginning, they had that great season. Then the last season, they were not as good as they were the season before. And, that tends to happen to every team. I think Arizona's kind of coming into a position where I think this year might be their year. I mean, if not, in terms of winning a Super Bowl, I think this is their year to at least win that division.
It's a tough division, and I say that for a couple reasons. For one, like we've seen the past couple years, the Seahawks and the Niners have controlled not only that division, but for the most part, the NFC. They've been two of the more dominant teams in the NFC over the past couple of seasons. You have the Packers up there, and you have a couple of the teams that are really good, but if you think about the top powerhouses in the NFC or even the NFL right now, the Seahawks and the Niners are two of them that come to mind. Now, the Seahawks kind of suffer from something that a lot of Super Bowl winners suffer from, is that you lose a lot of people. They lost a couple of their corners, they lost a safety, they lost a couple of receivers. A lot of key cogs to Seattle's team have left via free agency this past season? And are you going to be able to maintain all those players? Are you going to be able to backfill those players through the draft when you're drafting high every year now, or you're drafting low, I should say, every year, because you're such a successful team? And in a couple of years, when Richard Sherman's contract and Russell Wilson's contract and a couple other guys, their contracts come up, are you going to be able to pay them their money, the money that they're due and they deserve and that they're going to want to be paid, especially Russell Wilson after getting somewhat screwed on his rookie deal because he's a third-round pick? You're going to have to pay him for services rendered to a certain extent. Are you going to be able to put to maintain that contender? Are you going to be able to keep that team on the field? Niners, I think also they're – I don't want to say – I feel like they've peaked. I think they're still a very dominant team. I'd still pick them to finish ahead of Seattle this year. But we've seen them; they've lost a couple of key people as well this past season, free agency. Their receiving corps is banged up. I shouldn't say banged up, but their receiving corps is depleted. They have issues there. They sign a couple of people every year, but it seems like they're all just on one-year deals here and there. Frank Gore is not getting any younger. I mean, I know they have a lot of depth at running back, but it's not a team that's going to be able to sustain that high-level play for another couple, for that many more seasons. You look at the Cardinals and what we've said, they've continuously improved over the past couple of years. They have a very good up-and-coming defense. They have one of the best receivers in the game in Larry Fitzgerald, who still has a few good, solid, quality years left on him, and they've drafted a couple other receivers. They've drafted some running backs, and now they have their quarterback of the future, Logan Thomas. And then you look at the other team in that division is the Rams, who, despite their record, played very well last year, considering what they have. They've drafted a whole new group of receivers and running back last year. They have one of the better defenses in the league, despite some of the stat lines. They were a very, very tough physical defense the entirety of last season. And they had two top 15 picks in this year's draft. So they shore up their O-line with Greg Robinson, the number two overall pick, which they got from the Redskins. And then on the defensive side, with Aaron Donald, the number 13 overall pick. So two huge pieces right there that you're going to add. I mean, when you're a team that's really as good as has as much young, raw talent as they do, and then you're adding two top 15 picks like that, that can come in and possibly be starters from week one and be dominant starters at that point, I mean, that's a team that's really going to compete for the next 6-7 years, I think, at a very high level. They don't have a lot of big names that are going to command crazy contracts 2-4 years from now when the rookie deals are up. So I think they're going to be in better position in the long run for sustained success. And you have a guy coaching the team of Jeff Fisher who knows what he's doing. He's built teams. He's built a team before that has sustained success. At the end of it all, the Titans couldn't hold it together with Fisher, but he was able to maintain a contender for quite a long time during his tenure. So it's a very interesting division to look at. All right.
I mean, so on the other hand, my Giants look phenomenal. I just had to throw that in there.
Look, okay. All right. We'll switch coasts. That's fine. Go ahead. Talk about it.
I mean, look. I think having McAdoo is his name. What, mm-hmm. Dude? You need to change your name. Anyway, I think. Having him be the offensive coordinator is kind of the spark that the team needed. Just looking at the especially the Hall of Fame game, like, you saw something from the Giants that you haven't seen from the Giants in a very freaking long time. They got in the huddle, they called the play, they got to the line, they made adjustments, snapped the ball, and there was time left on the clock.
It's amazing.
They did other things you never seen them do before. They moved the pocket. The Giants have been one of those drop back and pass teams. You know, they roll the pocket. They actually look like a team that's trying to find new ways to win. And Eli actually looked like he's enjoying it. He looked like he was bored to death under Gilbride. And the defense looked pretty damn good. I mean, last year they were banged up as hell, but then the addition of, like I said, last year, having Beeson on the team, he definitely solidified the linebacker position, which was always a big thorn for the Giants. And then the two big offseason pickups in the defensive backfield was a thing of beauty. Walter Thurman, who I think if Amukamara wasn't there, would be a legitimate starter. But then, of course, you got DRC, and then Stevie Brown's back, looking good.
those are two.
I mean, I actually think. Look, I know the Eagles are already talking crap about them taking the division this year again. Which, by the way, you didn't win the division last year. You kind of fell into the division last year. It wasn't like you like totally beat everyone out. You just happened to, you know.
Yeah, the NFC East last year was basically toast to the man.
Yep.
You didn't win the division. I mean, I don't think Philly's going to be as dominant as they were without DeSean Jackson. I think his loss is going to hurt the team a lot more than they think. They can rely way too much on LeSean McCoy this year. Too many teams know that. There's no more secrets about Nick Foles. Teams have enough tape on him. They know what he's about. They know what he can do. The defense is improved, but not drastically improved. The Eagles are what the Eagles are. The Giants, I think you're right. I think that's a team that's going to be dangerous with the additions they've made on defense, with the new energy that the new offensive coordinator brings, and with the stout running game that they have. I mean, when you hear the news a couple weeks ago about David Wilson, the fact that he's done, the injury is going to basically end his career, he's retiring. I mean, you feel bad for the guy for not really having a prolonged career, for not being able to play longer. And you feel bad if you're a Giants fan because you've invested a first-round draft pick in the guy. You had so much high expectations for him. You thought this was your running back of the future, and it just didn't pan out. But you look at their backfield, and it's Rashad Jennings, it's Peyton Hillis, and Andre Williams, who looked phenomenal to me in the whole fam game. I didn't see a whole lot of the plays from the Giants' second preseason game. But from the Hall of Fame game, Andre Williams looked absolutely unbelievable. I think he is going to be a great addition to that team. And the Giants, like you said, they did something in the first couple games that we haven't seen out of the Big Blue in a number of years, and that was screen passes. They called and executed screen passes with amazing ease for a team that had no idea how to do that the past few seasons. Maybe once every three or four games, it looked like they tried and failed miserably almost every time. And coming into the Hall of Fame game, it seemed like it was second nature to them. They looked like the Saints, or they looked like the Patriots. They were running them beautifully. Blockers were getting upfield. The offensive line was moving. You said the pocket was moving. The Giants look like a completely new team. They look re-energized and invigorated. It's a team that's going to make some noise. Maybe not in the entirety of the NFC, but certainly in the NFC East. The Cowboys are the Cowboys. We're not expecting anything more than 6-10 for them. The Redskins, I think, are going to be the same old Redskins. And it's going to come down to you and the Eagles, and we've already talked about the Eagles, and we see what they look like. Let's switch locker rooms, stay in the same stadium, and talk about my Jets, 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 Jets. This was a season where – this was an offseason where they had tons of money to spend in free agency. You have a general manager in Idzik who wants to build a team for the future, but still you have to spend enough money and you have to put a decent product on the field right now. So I think he did a decent job of doing both of those things. He picked up a few pieces for the future. He drafted pretty smart. He collected a lot of draft picks throughout this past draft. And he did spend some money. He brought in some key pieces in Chris Johnson, in Eric Decker, and Michael Vick as a backup. What he didn't do, however, is address the defensive back situation. And you have a brilliant mind in Rex Ryan, and if Rex says he's happy with the crew that he has, it to a certain extent has to respect that decision. But I can almost guarantee you that that's not what Rex Ryan said this offseason. I guarantee you if Idzik approached him and said, hey, should we bring back Antonio Cromartie for 2 years, $3 million a year? I guarantee you Rex Ryan said yes, and they didn't do it. They let Cromartie sign with, I believe it was Arizona, at nothing, at $3 million. There's no way the Jets, that if it was up to Rex Ryan, he would have let that happen. They didn't even call Revis when Revis said that he wanted to come back here. I can kind of go for the Revis thing. I understand to a certain extent you don't want to go down that road. But you're expecting to take the field this season with D. Milner, who looked very good at the end of last season, but in no way I think is ready to be the number one starting corner and go up against the Packers and the Lions and the Bears in a span of 4 weeks this coming season with your number one corner without a great safety. You have Dexter McDougal, you have Kyle Wilson, you have Darren Walls at cornerback, and you have Antonio Allen, DeJuan Landry, and your first round pick Calvin Pryor, who was hurt at safety. Now you lose Dexter McDougal for the season, and Milner has a high ankle sprain, so he'll be back maybe week two, and hopefully he'll be 90-95% week two for the Packers. And so that's your secondary. Your secondary is Kyle Wilson starting at corner, Darren Walls as your second corner, hopefully Milner's in there, and then Antonio Allen and Dewan Landry at safety. How is it that you're going to beat Green Bay and beat Chicago and beat Detroit with those defensive backs? You're not beating Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall or Calvin Johnson or Jordy Nelson. You're not doing it.
I see your point, and I agree with you on that one. I think it's I don't know. Look, the one thing the Jets still have on their side is that their division is still crap. So yes, they're not going to do well outside their division. I mean, actually, you know what? That's not even true. The AFC as a whole in general is not exactly a conference to be feared right now. So you know what? It's fine. I think I agree with you. I think they were pretty timid in the offseason. And
I don't know that they were timid. They made good moves. They identified that they needed a receiver, a running back, and a quarterback. Those were three needs that they identified, and they picked those up. They picked up Eric Decker, Chris Johnson, and Michael Vick. They had identified and addressed their needs. Absolutely. But they completely neglected defensive back.
Okay, so actually, since you brought that up, I have to ask you about that. What do you think about this whole Michael Vick situation? I mean, who would you like to see under center?
It's a difficult question to answer because it depends on what you... If your expectation is all in for the season, you want to win as many games and try to get into the playoffs this season, then I want to see Michael Vick. If I want to be entertained and I want to see one of the great mobile quarterbacks this game has ever had, then I want to see Michael Vick. If I want to build for the future and hope to be a Super Bowl contender in 2 years, then I want to see Geno Smith and I'll take my lumps. I understand bringing in Vick for a couple reasons. He has a similar play style to Geno Smith, and so it helps the continuity in practice and in game plans, and it helps to develop Geno. And Michael Vick played well under Marty Morningwig in Philadelphia, and so he understands Marty's system. He can come in at any time and probably pick it up and not have to worry about having an abridged playbook, kind of like what Matt Sims had to deal with the past year. So I understand those things. I don't necessarily have a problem with Michael Vick. I think out of the quarterbacks available in this past offseason, he was probably... he made the most sense. We got him at a good price point. I don't have an issue with it. It's just a matter of, do I want to go all in and try to get whatever I can out of this team now, or do I really just want to build for the future? If I want to build for the future, you got to find out what Geno's all about. And if Geno's not the guy, I'd rather know that this year than 2 years from now.
Okay, so what about this perspective? Very few quarterbacks come into the league and they're capable of running an offense their first time out. He tried it last year. Horrible. What about having him carry the clipboard for this season so he can learn from Michael Vick? I mean, look, I think it's safe to say that no matter what, Vick's career is on the back end, right? I mean,
absolutely. He's what, 34?
Yeah, I mean, he's never... I think this is probably his last opportunity to even... have a shot at a starting gig, and after that it's gonna be nothing but backup duties. And I say within 2-3 years, four max, he's done. So what about the
problem is the can of worms, the fact that Geno started last year, and it's very difficult, I think, to have somebody start, not lose the job, but still be demoted and not have that really hurt you in the long run. It's one thing if Geno goes out there and plays badly and gets benched and learns from Vic. It worked great for Eli. Eli came in, was not ready to start. They forced him into it, and he played horrible. Got benched. Kurt Warner came in, showed the boy how to play, and when he was ready, he took over, and you've won two Super Bowls since. But he played bad enough to get benched, and Geno hasn't done that yet.
But okay. So you made an interesting statement there. I would also argue that Geno also hasn't done enough to win the game, to win the job either. Like, he hasn't been abysmal, but he hasn't been like, oh my God, this is going to be the future of the freaking NFL. I mean,
name a receiver that he was throwing to last year.
It doesn't. Yes. Okay. As a quarterback, yes. If you have no one to catch the ball, you're going to have a hard time all season. I will give you that. But forget those kinds of problems. I'm talking about the things that a quarterback needs to learn how to do and learn how to do quick and well in this league. Decision making, not turning the ball over. You know, when to use your legs, when to trust your line, when to, you know what I mean? And I know for a fact, I mean, well, I shouldn't say I know for a fact. I'm about 90% sure that he didn't get the full Jets playbook last year. I'm sure they gave him.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, whereas you have a guy who you know, yes, I will admit, I'm a bit of a Michael Vick fan, not going to lie. But, not even a bit, but I'm definitely a Michael Vick fan. I think as a franchise, if you want to take a shot at making the playoffs, winning your division, I mean, look, if they win their division and they can actually figure out their defensive backfield, they have a shot of making it pretty far into the playoffs, right? Now, let's face it, the Jets can use a playoff appearance right now, more than just a couple of games.
Absolutely. Here's the biggest problem that the Jets face this season. It has nothing to do with their talent. It has nothing to do with who's starting quarterback. It's this list that I'm going to read off to you. Week one is Oakland. That's fine. It's at home. We're going to beat Oakland. We can do that without anybody playing cornerback. I'm not worried about Oakland. But after Oakland, this is in a row. This is the Packers, the Bears, the Lions, the Chargers, the Broncos, the Patriots. Those are our next six opponents in a row. Those are probably the top six offenses in the NFL. And we play them week after week after week.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I don't. But you know what? Look, you can't really say anything about that, right? Because the reality of the situation is that you know you're going to have to face these teams at some point anyway. So I don't think it really makes a difference.
But put a Bills game in the middle of that or something. Put a Dolphins game in that, like.
Well, look, but we know every season some team gets
this team can start 1-6 and still finish 10-6 just because of the way that schedule is. But if they start 1-6, where does that leave Rex Ryan and Geno Smith and a lot of people on this team, where the fans and the owner are going to look at the record and say this is unacceptable and make wholesale changes when the rest of the season is Bills, Chiefs, Steelers, Bills, Dolphins, Vikings, Titans, Patriots, Dolphins. Those are a lot of winnable games. So we can, like I said, start 1-6, but still finish 9-7 the way the schedule's set up. But will they be afforded that opportunity if they do start 1-6? Which they very well can. I'm the biggest Jets fan you know, and I'm looking at that and I say, okay, Raiders a win, Packers, Bears, Lions, Chargers, Broncos, Patriots, loss.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing though. You don't have to win all of those games. You just have to win like one or two of them. I mean,
right. But my question is, if they start off 1-6 based on that schedule, do you pull the plug on Rex? Do you pull the plug on Geno? Do you start making wholesale changes because the season is lost, or do you understand that this was a really tough front-loaded schedule and you give them both the benefit of the doubt and you see what they can do to salvage the season?
Well,
okay, 1-6. So, what do you do? You're
so,
Woody.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think if you finish, I don't think they would fire Rex in the middle of the season, but I think if you. Look, no matter what, if you guys have anything, in my opinion, short of a playoff appearance, I think Ryan is gone next year anyway. That's the truth.
Depends what the rest of the league does. I think if we finish above 500, 9-7 or better, I think Rex is okay.
Even if
we don't make the playoffs, because you can't control what the AFC North or the AFC West and teams like that do. I think that you may see.
But that is absolutely true. But here's the thing. All you have to do is you just have to win your division. And that's a guaranteed in.
True.
So if you can't even do that, and look, who the rest of your division right now? The Dolphins are still trying to figure out how to play football. I mean,
Dolphins are awful.
I mean, I'm surprised that this preseason game they actually figured out where the end zone was. the Bills are still trying to figure out what they are as a team, and which leaves it as potentially a two-team competition again, like it's been for the past few years. And the Patriots are a great team, and the Patriots will always be a great team, much as it pains me to say that.
No. The Patriots will be a great team as long as they have Belichick and Brady together.
And, I mean, and there's been all the speculation that Brady's going to retire after the season. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's...
Yeah, but they got their guy.
Yeah.
They got the guy in Garoppolo. I screamed when New England picked him because I wanted him badly. He's a kid who I think is going to be a star in this league, and I hate the fact that the Patriots were able to pick him up.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, either way... I don't know. I mean, I think you guys... This is your season to do anything if you're going to do anything. Like I said, I'm pretty sure Rex is gone after next season if you don't get a division win. I guess we agree to disagree on that one.
I think he needs to be over 500. I don't think it's contingent upon the playoffs. I just think he has to have a winning record. He has to improve from last season. They went 8-8 last season. He has to improve.
But is 9-7 really an improvement?
I think given the schedule, I think you have to take the schedule with a grain of salt and understand that you're playing some of, if not all, of the top offenses in this league this season. Forget about the fact that they're all in a row. I mean, it's pouring salt on the wounds, the fact that they're all in a row. But looking around the 31 other teams in the NFL, those are probably the top six offenses in the league, and you're playing them all. And so I think that you have to be a little conscious of that fact when evaluating playoffs and win-loss record and whatnot.
Yep.
We'll see how it goes. We got a couple more weeks of preseason. We'll see how the cornerbacks look this coming Saturday. They play the Bengals, and we'll see. Speaking of the Bengals, just want to touch on it really quickly because it happened a couple weeks ago, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. The Andy Dalton deal, there were so many people that were just screaming their heads off about this deal. The way it broke was it was a 6-year, $115 million deal. And everybody's like, what? There's no way Andy Dalton is not worth that much money. That's crazy. And then we find out it's 6 years, $96 million with escalators for percentage of snaps and playoff appearances and wins and whatnot. The reality is it's a 2-year, $25 million deal. Years 3 through 6 are year-to-year contracts with team options, basically. This is a 2-year play you're betting on yourself type of thing. Andy has been awful in the playoffs, and that's where a lot of the criticism comes with him. He has not made good decisions in the playoffs. He's looked awful all three times. But here's the thing. He's been to the playoffs. Well, who was the last Bengals quarterback to go to the playoffs 3 straight years? And he's done it in his first 3 years. This has been an irrelevant team for so many years. And since they drafted him and AJ Green, they've been relevant. They've been a team that fans are interested in. They've been a team that free agents want to come to. They've been a team that's built a great defense. And if it wasn't for some injuries last year, they would have continued to be a dominant defense. This is showing a fan base that's been like longing for something positive for such a long time. It's showing them some commitment into a guy, even though it's only 2 years. The way the deal looks, it shows some kind of commitment from the team. It shows that, look, we're behind you. We think we can win with this guy. We think that he's still the future of this franchise, and we want to build a team around him. But it gives us an out in case he does fall off a cliff. We don't want to be stuck with a bad contract for the next 6 years. I think all around it's a very good deal. And I'm glad to see, even though it's an AFC, it's a team that we compete against, I'm glad to see some consistency from a team that has not been able to get their act together in so long. If only the Browns can follow suit.
Yeah, they're the Browns, and they will always be the Browns. That's my opinion.
Who's starting for the Browns week one, Johnny Manziel or Brian Hoyer?
You know what? Just because he's going to sell more tickets, it's going to be Manziel.
Yeah, Brian Hoyer deserves it. He should be starting, but you're right. Because of the fanfare and the hoopla around him, it's going to be Manziel. Let's talk about the Jags for a minute. For some reason, the two of us seem to have a soft spot for that team. I don't know what it is. For some reason, we kind of like the Jags. Now, they draft Blake Bortles as basically the savior of the franchise, only a few years removed from the Blaine Gabbert era, if you could even call it an era. Bortles comes in as they let go of their bell cow mojo. And Maurice Jones-Drew, I believe, signed with Oakland, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Justin Blackman gets suspended probably forever. I don't think we're ever going to see him in the league again. And he's going to take the field with Cecil Shorts and Marquise Lee at running back. At wide receiver. And Marquise Lee, rookie, of course, which shows a lot of promise. And we hope that he's going to be a very good receiver, but still a rookie and a guy who did not play his heart out in the first preseason game, who had some trouble running routes when he knew the ball wasn't coming to him and got publicly blasted by his coach. And Tony Gerhardt is the starting running back. Looking at the depth chart, it looks like a team of replacement players. And like I said, we both have somewhat of a soft spot for the Jags, but is this a team that can really win more than two games this year? I mean, Blake Bortles looked great in his brief stint in the first game. He made some quick throws, some accurate throws, some hard throws with some zip on it. He looked like the man. He looked like he is there. He is the guy. But like I said, looking at this depth chart, can they really win a couple more than two games? Like, it's just the island of misfit toys.
I think they'll surprise you. I think they'll look. They're still going to have a losing season no matter what. But I think they're going to do better than you expect them to do. I think they definitely made the move in the right direction. I was a fan of Marquise Lee from when he was back in college. And for some reason, I can't remember if it was USC or Oregon. I can't remember which one. But anyway, and he looked good. I mean, Toby Gerhardt is not going to be the guy that's going to, you know, run for, you know, 200 yards in a game or whatever. But he's also never really had too much of a starting spot. And also, look, once again, this is not a league that really depends on the passing game anymore or running game anymore anyway, so it doesn't really make a difference. He just needs someone to take some pressure off the quarterback. So they'll be okay. I mean, if we're going to talk about teams in that area of the country that I'm really worried about, I am more worried about Carolina than I am about the Jags. I mean, Carolina officially has no one. It's their starting lineup is Cam Newton and a bunch of guys off a practice squad from somewhere.
D'Angelo Williams, right? Mike Tolbert?
Sure. And then on the other side of the ball, their starting lineup is who? Everyone on that team that isn't Cam Newton is gone. I mean, even Captain Munnerlyn. I mean, as far back as I can remember, I mean, I guess it's only been maybe 4 or 5 years, but he seems like he was by far their best cornerback. I mean, they have no one. I mean, I think they're in worse shape than the Jags are. I think the Jags will actually, you know, like I said, they won't have a winning season, but they'll be okay. I'll be surprised if the Panthers get 4 wins this season.
I don't know. I look at the Panthers. I feel like they're not going to be that bad. I'm looking at the depth chart now. You have Newton, obviously, on the center. D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, and Mike Tolbert as a three-headed monster at running back. That's fine. Yes, Williams and Stewart are both getting up there in age, but between the three of them, sharing carries, I think they're fine. Jericho Cotri, Jason Avant, no, those are not the receivers you want there. Kelvin Benjamin looked promising. I think he'll be all right. You got Ryan Khalil as your center. Your offensive line looks okay. Nothing great, but it looks okay. I don't think they made that many changes from last season. Defense, Charles Johnson's a beast if he's healthy. Chase Blackburn's a very good safety. Luke Kuechly is a top pick. He was a defensive rookie of the year a couple of seasons ago. Roman Harper at safety. I think the Panthers are all right. Star Lotulelei. No, I think the Panthers are pretty good. Thomas Davis. No, dude, this team looks stacked. I think the Panthers are going to be all right. The issues they're going to run into is that you still have the Saints in the division. You have the Bucs who are getting better with the new regime coming in. No more Greg Schiano. You have Lovie Smith down there who knows how to coach. You got Josh McCown who has played with Lovie Smith before and hopefully you can get the most out of him. You got a good running back down there. Vincent Jackson at receiver. So the Bucs are going to be improved. And the Falcons, I think last year was a fluke. I don't think the Falcons are going to be as bad this year as they were last year.
Although that's a team. Yeah, I agree with you there. I think that just had a really crappy season. I don't think they're going to let that happen again.
Here's the thing. Look at their depth chart. I don't see a lot of names on that team that I'm really confident about. They've lost a lot of people. Tony Gonzalez is gone. And then they really haven't added any big names this offseason, either via free agency or the draft. The only real improvement I've seen was Devin Hester in free agency, and then they drafted offensive tackle Jake Matthews with their first pick. So I can actually see the Falcons finishing fourth in that division again, despite having a top 12 quarterback. I don't know, I guess that's just slightly above average when you think about it, because do you really consider Matt Ryan top 10 anymore?
No.
Probably not. Maybe 10.
No. Well, you know what? Yeah, I think he kind of backs into the 10 spot just because there isn't really anyone else better, I guess. But he's definitely not within that top 5 that you would have considered him a couple of seasons ago.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Nope, I put him 14th.
Okay.
So, average quarterback. Never mind. All right. Anything else that stuck out to you this past... like I said, we're only 1 week into preseason. Second week two games start, I believe, tomorrow night, Thursday night. And we'll see how some teams do that. They've made some changes on their depth chart. They try a lot of teams are going to give the second string quarterback an opportunity to start this game, if it is indeed an open competition. So we'll see what happens there. And then for the third preseason game, we see the tentative starters coming in. And then the fourth one, of course, is where people just kind of fighting for those last couple roster spots and the cutdowns are made. We're not going to bring you shows every week during the preseason. We'll put some blogs up on the website, and then we'll be back as preseason is wrapping up, and then we'll do a full show as a preview for the regular season before that kicks off first Thursday in September. And again, we always invite you to follow us on Twitter. We're at FifthDownNFL. Like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/FifthDownPodcast. And the website, again, is fifthdown.org. And again, we'll be back towards the end of preseason with an all-new episode of the Fifth Down.